up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, there is a fine line in sports between having a good time and taunting, and the Big 12 is trying to figure out whether horns down the celebration that opponents against Texas do when they score against the Longhorns, or just doing it to diss the Longhorns in general, should be a penalty. The Big 12 has said, well, it depends on the usage. That if you do it maybe in front of your fans, it's one thing. If you do it to a player, if you do it in front of their fans, it's another. This was a sign that Will Greer of the West Virginia Mountaineers used. It caused Tom Herman to say, I thought, you know, a taunting penalty erased a score because Will Greer had scored. Nevertheless, the Big 12 said, yeah, in that situation, that would have been a penalty. But they're saying, listen, it does depend. I'm not a big taunting person. I don't think you should be able to do anything you want. I'm not trying to be, you know, soft or anything, but I do think there is a level of fun that I think you should have with college sports or athletics in general. And, you know, horns down, it's not like he's, you know, flipping the middle finger at the guy or doing the throat slash. It's just an innocent little, hey, you know what? We got the best of you. But they are trying to curb all this. I just think let's have a little bit of fun. If it does get out of hand, it gets out of hand. This is the fine line I was talking about, right? I mean, we get to a point where we want guys to be able to express themselves, but we don't want to express themselves too much, right? It's like the NFL, right? The NFL gets criticized all the time when they limit player celebration. And we say, oh, it's the no fun league. It's the no fun league. But what they're trying to do, and this is to their credit, that what they're trying to do is say, look, let's not turn every touchdown into a 35-minute, you know, dance routine. Let's not go that crazy. And even though the celebrations are relatively short, what they are worried about is somebody going, oh, by the way, here's a routine that we do at the end of touchdowns that's going to take up 3 to 4 minutes, and we do it every time we score. You give an inch, people always take a mile. That's always the case. Yep, horns down seems like innocent fun. Again, it's not throat slashing. It's not, you know, gagging or anything like that. It's just horns down. But what the Big 12 wants to make sure is it doesn't get out of hand.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going to be talking to Trevor Risk from OutsideTheCut.com. Golf, British Open starting on Thursday. Did I get that last name right, Gio? Risk?
Yes, you did.
I did good. I always like it when I do that right out of the gate. You know, when I, instead of just completely butchering the last name, and you got to be like, no, Tony, it's Jones. Where are you getting Risk? It's Smith.
Riesk.
That's a good, you know. Anyway, we'll talk British Open. First time it's been in Ireland in like forever and a day. Darren Clark, Graham McDowell, Rory McIlroy. Those are the Irish golfers that are participating in the British Open. All eyes will be on McIlroy. He has won the tournament before. Of course, he wants to win in front of the hometown crowd. He grew up an hour away from the course. Set a course record back when he was like 16 years old, but they've redesigned Royal Portrush, so it doesn't really count anymore, I guess, or whatever it is. But it's the British Open is an interesting golf tournament because, again, weather plays such a factor, but it's the oldest of the majors, and it's called the Open, except in the United States we call it the British Open because we have a U.S. Open. But it's really a global tournament. It's, you know, players from, you qualify from around the world. And it's played on these links golf courses that, for a lot of them, they're not aesthetically pleasing to look at. But this one at Royal Portrush is. Now, look, I'm still eyeing Tiger. Now, that's my thing. All the young guns that have come up, Spieth, Rory McIlroy, etc. Tiger's still, we're getting into the twilight of his career. We still have a ways to go where he can still be competitive. He's only 41. And as Mickelson showed, you can be competitive in your late 40s. But if he's going to catch Jack Nicklaus, this is about the time that he should be racking him up. They do get harder as you get older. Tiger hasn't practiced a lot. He hasn't played a lot since the Masters. I wonder if there's something going on, or he just doesn't want to play at these tournaments. He just doesn't, you know, he's realizing his role as a parent, or he just doesn't need to. It's whatever it is, but he's not playing a lot, and he wasn't ready for Bethpage. He was under the weather, yeah, but he really wasn't prepared for Bethpage. Probably knew he didn't have the game. But Pebble Beach, I was really shocked he wasn't a factor there. I mean, it was after the Masters. Remember, the Masters wasn't, Tiger didn't explode at the Masters. He didn't shoot a final round 30 to catch the leaders. What Tiger did was he played well enough and consistent enough that everybody else sort of fell around him. Right? Molinari put it in the water at 12. Koepka had a little bit of a struggle. Like, there were guys around him that weren't making shots, and he made the shots. He did make some birdies late. The shot at 12 was as brilliant. I mean, at 16 was as brilliant of a shot. That showed the complete knowledge of the golf course, where he knocked the ball on the green in the right spot, got it to the point where he caught the slope and was able to trickle down to a couple of feet from the hole. Perfect gust and knowledge kind of golf shot. Perfectly executed. But he hasn't been the sort of Tiger factor that we thought he was going to be. Was the Masters victory supposed to propel him to do some other great stuff? We thought, but it hasn't really turned out that way. But again, I'm looking at the large picture here in terms of Tiger. Like, this is a career that had been completely dead. Like, think, just, you don't even have to go back that far to remember a Tiger Woods that was pulling out of golf tournaments because his back was hurting, was showing up and couldn't hit chips, was embarrassingly shooting in the 80s one time at Memorial, just completely lost his golf game. And we thought, he's never going to win again. This is it. What you remember of Tiger is what you're going to remember of Tiger. There's no more. But that's what made the Masters win so special, was because it really was a moment that caught us a little bit off guard. It wasn't that we didn't think he'd win again. He had won at East Lake the year before. He was competitive in both the British Open and the PGA. But that leaderboard was loaded that day, and Tiger was just one of many. He didn't have a five-shot lead. He was going up against a bunch of people. Now, you know, in retrospect, you could say, yeah, of course, Tiger can win the Masters, of course, right? But after, you know, a couple of, you know, seeing who was there, who didn't back, they weren't backing down early, and then all of a sudden, Tiger is hanging around, and guys are making bogeys, and he's not going anywhere, and he's making pars, and he's making his putts, and next thing you know, he's got the lead, and the lead for good, and he keeps it, and he builds upon it, and he wins the Masters. So was it unexpected? Yeah, kind of in a way, even though he had won the year prior and he had played well in the majors prior. It was a different way that Tiger won. Like, Tiger didn't win the way we had seen Tiger win before. And it made us go, all right, let's turn the machine on again, right? How many majors is he going to win now? Jack's record is intact. My God, could he win the Grand Slam of all things? But those were just fool's errands. He wasn't going to win the Grand Slam. He knew he wasn't going to win the Grand Slam. He made a joke about it, about a bettor who bet money on winning the Grand Slam. And he was at a tournament and he was at the practice range and he made a funny joke about that person. Even he knew. It's a different type of golf now. It's a different sport. We talked about it with Brooks Koepka. There is an intimidation factor that Tiger had that he doesn't have anymore to these guys. And you know why? Because they all were raised to play his game. They weren't raised to play another game, and then all of a sudden this young kid from California was taking the game to another level and they had to adjust. Jordan Spieth, Brooks Koepka, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed, all of the young guys, all of them grew up knowing how to play golf through Tiger. Golf was cool because of Tiger, but when you watched him as a kid, that is what you emulated. You didn't just emulate the consistency of the ball striking or the distance off the tee. You knew that what Tiger was doing was as much psychological as it was physical. That he was going to these tournaments and he was putting it in their heads of the opponent that it was over. That you could go out there and do the very, very best, but you weren't going to win. You could go home to your wife and kids and say, I played the best golf of my life, but you weren't going to win. That's what these guys grew up with. So, of course, they weren't intimidated by Tiger's presence. They had also grew up in the professional ranks where that didn't exist. It wasn't like David Duval and Ernie Els and Phil Mickelson back in the late 90s when they were trying to establish themselves as the number one golfer in the world, the new young guns. They were all vying. You know, Ernie Els won two major championships by his mid-20s, you know, winning the U.S. Open twice. He won the British Open in 2002. Ernie Els had established early success. David Duval was once the number one golfer in the world. Shot a 59 on a final round of the Bob Hope. Phil Mickelson had been, you know, excellent for a very long time. Still hadn't broken through in the majors, but still was one of the formidable golfers on the planet. And here comes Tiger. And he's brand new, and also he's taken the game to another level. Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed, those guys who grew up, in their early times in their career, they didn't have Tiger Woods to contend with. They had each other to contend with. And they weren't intimidated by each other. So it's a new world for Tiger. And I'm still fascinated by that new world. Because I do want to see him break Jack's record. Because there's something missing about this guy. Again, generations are all different, right? You ask anybody in their 80s and they'll tell you, you know, Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio is the best baseball player. You ask somebody in their 60s and 50s, they'll say somebody else. Ask somebody in their 40s, they'll say somebody else. Add somebody in their 20s, they'll say somebody else, right? But the way Tiger dominated golf and changed golf, it's fitting if he had the majors title from Jack Nicklaus. But Nicklaus kind of did the same thing in the 60s, right? Nicklaus was playing a game people weren't familiar with either. But it just feels like, man, Tiger, without that, because that had been so important to him and it had been so important to the people covering him, that if he didn't get it, it would feel like we missed out. But if he had never come back, we would have really missed out. If he had never completed the circle, we would have really missed out. I always said, listen, the thing that worried me the most about Tiger Woods' legacy wasn't the things he did, it would be the things he didn't do. That was my biggest worry, that the wins would disappear and the larger picture of Tiger's career would be overshadowed by, and then one fateful night in November. And then these injuries occurred, and he never was the golfer again that we once saw. He had all of these things come at him at the same time, in the same moment. He was getting a divorce. His life was scandalous. He was addicted to painkillers. He had back surgeries. He could barely move. He was shooting bad scores. He wasn't playing anymore. And that's it. It just came and it went and it disappeared and it was gone. And when it was there, it was awesome. But it comes with a caveat. And him winning the Masters closes that circle a little bit. Yes, you can talk about all of the stuff that he had to go through, the surgeries, the absence from the game, maybe even his life as scandalous as it was in terms of the divorce with his wife and all of the personal issues that he had with his family. But also remember, on the back end of all of that is the fact that when he came back, he electrified the golf world again. Golf was getting stale. Here comes Tiger. The sport was never okay without him. I don't care what anybody says. It was never okay without him. What I saw at East Lake last year, what I saw at Augusta this year, golf wasn't okay without him. The enthusiasm and the energy, it just wasn't. I don't care what anybody says. It just wasn't. And if he wins at the British Open this week, or any week for that matter, next year, year before, with that audience, as gracious as they are and as knowledgeable of the sport as they are, it adds to the specialness of the closing of the circle, as I mentioned before. That's the fascination I have with Tiger's career. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. You want to join in on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Again, we'll talk more British Open coming up, but I'll get into some NFL, the new coaches that are taking over teams. Who do we like going into the 2019 season? That's next, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Colbert, here's Tony D.
Hey, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. We're close, convenient, known for our guaranteed everyday low prices, excellent customer service from professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Again, Trevor Reisk is going to join us from OutsideTheCut.com. We'll talk British Open coming up in about 13 minutes. All right, so again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, the Broncos are opening up training camp today. First practice tomorrow. Vic Fangio, a new head coach for Denver. And the right hire for the Broncos. They had gone with Vance Joseph. It didn't work out. And Vic Fangio has been waiting in the wings of the NFL assistant coaches for 30-plus years, 32 years to be precise, waiting for an opportunity to be a head coach, and he finally gets to be a head coach. This is, to me, a slam-dunk hire if you're Denver. I give them a complete grade A on this. Now, some other coaching hires, it's to me, I'm going to wait and see. If you don't mind, I'm going to wait and see. Right, Matt LaFleur with the Green Bay Packers, I'm going to wait and see. I never saw anything at Tennessee last year that made me think he's the front runner for that job. Now, some of these guys will wow you in an interview. They know what they're doing. They know how to talk the talk, and they know what you want to hear and what they can do. And sometimes you don't need to showcase your skills at point A to do a great job at point B, right? And maybe Matt LaFleur is that kind of coach where, all right, maybe I didn't show some super brilliance while I was with the Titans, but that wasn't necessary. Once I get Aaron Rodgers, then I really will showcase my skills, right? Zach Taylor will be the new head coach at Cincinnati. Same thing. Had a cup of coffee with Sean McVay. It always works out that way, right? The Sean McVay hires were great. Brian Taylor down in Miami. But, you know, going back to the Fangio hire, that to me is interesting for the Broncos situation. I like that. And the one that's probably the more controversial is Cliff Kingsbury at Arizona. Now, look, I think if you're Arizona, this is the kind of splash that you're looking to make. Right? There's no question Cliff Kingsbury is an offensive genius, right? And in an NFL where it looked like, and it did for a while, that's the direction the league was heading, why not take a chance, right? He is the 12th head coach to jump from the college to the NFL since 2000, right? And sometimes you need to make this kind of noise. Right, there's all this, but there's always going to be a buzz about Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, right? Which NFL team is going to snag him, right? He's another one of those offensive gurus. Now, Kingsbury could fall flat on his face and realize that the level of NFL football, even though he's a smart NFL football guy, that the level at the NFL is just not his cup of tea. Steve Spurrier found that out when he went to the Washington Redskins from Florida. It's a different animal. It's not so much the X's and O's, it's the business. When you recruit, you got to sell. And if you're the better salesman, you get the better clients. But in the NFL, it's not about being a salesman. It's about being able to provide for players when it comes time to picking up free agency, signing extensions, etc. And sometimes teams do a good job with that, and sometimes they don't. And sometimes you realize that you're dealing with men when you're dealing with a business. Some people would prefer the college game, where yet it's a business, but you're dealing with guys that don't really have the sort of the financial gain that you do in the National Football League. But as far as the X's and O's, I think Cliff Kingsbury's success could come with Kyler Murray as the two developed. The problem is, how long do they have, right? How long do they have? If you're going to fire a guy after 1 year, like Arizona did, then how long do you give Cliff Kingsbury? Because in order for this to work, you're going to need some moments, right, where you're going to get some growing pains. This is still a relatively young guy who's never coached at this level before. But when Steve Spurrier said this best, when he went to the Redskins, he said, in the NFL, every game is sort of a toss-up. If you can win almost all your close games, you'll do very well if you've got a pretty good team. But in college, you're going to be favored out of 12 games, eight or so. And Alabama will be favored in every one of them. But in the NFL, the competition is close. Just because you go 6-10 doesn't mean you have a terrible, terrible football team. It just means some things didn't go your way. Chip Kelly, right? I mean, look at Chip Kelly. He basically used to say the same kind of thing. You know, Pete Carroll was in the college game for a long time, went to the Seahawks. It's a different game. Bill O'Brien, the same thing. I mean, think about the list of these guys who've gone from college right to the pros, where some of them worked out and some of them didn't. Butch Davis, Spurrier, Dennis Erickson, Saban, right? When he went to from LSU to the Dolphins, went 9-7 before returning to the college game. Bobby Petrino went to the Atlanta Falcons, left for the college game. Pete Carroll has stayed in the NFL. Jim Harbaugh has gone back to the college game, but had success with the 49ers. Greg Schiano is now in the NFL. Was with the Buccaneers. I think he's back in the college game as an assistant coach. Doug Marrone, Chip Kelly, Bill O'Brien. Those are the names. I mean, look. I don't think Cliff Kingsbury was such a crazy hire. Now, listen, the Sean McVay hires, the ones where everybody wanted a piece of Sean McVay. Yeah, let that work out. Let me see that. But I'm glad Arizona took a gamble on Cliff Kingsbury, because what are they going to do? Just another assistant? Just yet another assistant that's been waiting around, waiting to get a shot? Or do you just go bold, knowing you have the number one pick and you're going to draft a kid like Kyler Murray that Kingsbury was drooling over and couldn't wait to get his hands on? And now you just basically said, here's my hand and I'm going to lay it on the table. I've got a college coach and a college quarterback and they're both learning the ropes of the NFL. And you know what? We think them learning the ropes is still a better option for us than anything else that's out there. And so let's play. And if we go 3-10, we go 3-10. But you know what? If we commit to this a little bit, that 1 year will turn into to another year of experience, will turn into two, maybe three, and now we'll see what we've got. I think it's bold and I like it. You know, and a lot of times, and here's the other thing too. Look, assistant coaches who have earned their right to become head coaches, who have interviewed well, who know what they're doing, whether they're from the Patriots or any other organization, talked about Sean McVay's, you know, guys. Great. You can sell that to a fan base. But you know what else sells when you take a big, bold move? The two different moves that the Broncos made and the Cardinals made are sellable in two different ways. Vic Fangio earned the right to be a head coach by spending 32 years in the league, had been waiting to take the next step. The Broncos were willing to give a good veteran coach, assistant coach, the step to become a head coach who was brilliant in his defensive schemes and could take that next step and become a head coach and do really well. There's a good feeling that Fangio will be good at this job. Is there the same good feeling about Cliff Kingsbury? No, it's split 50-50, 60-40, whatever it is, but there isn't an overwhelming feeling that Kingsbury will be a success. But what it is you expect it to be exciting. You expect it to be different, and it's challenging, right? We may stink, but it's no better than what we're doing now. We're not a Super Bowl team where everybody left and we needed a coach and a quarterback. This is a bad football team that is rolling the dice on a college quarterback and a college coach and trying to make something of that. Why not? I didn't think the Redskins were terrible hiring Spurrier, even though he's a bad NFL coach. Yeah, the hottest college coach in the game coming to your team? Of course. You know, just Spurrier saw the league differently. He saw the league for what it is. Sometimes you don't know what you don't know. And when you go there and you say, all right, what exactly does it take to win at this level? How do I handle players? Spurrier tried to handle players like he did his college players. That didn't work among grown men who make a living doing this. And sometimes you have to strip yourself of that mindset. But when you look at some of the young coaches in the National Football League, the Sean McVays of the world, right? You look at look how young these guys are getting more and more. Yeah, you know, I mean, my God, they're in their 30s for crying out loud. Right? They all come in with enthusiasm and knowledge of how, you know, they want to do it in a certain way, and they're taking the chance of doing it their way. Kingsbury was interesting because he didn't exactly come from the college to the pros. He really came from the unemployment line to the pros. He was fired by Texas Tech before their season was over, didn't have a job, and then got this one. It's one thing when you have the press conference that says, thanks for everything, I'm going to take the next step in my career. He didn't really get that because Texas Tech had already moved on from him. That's what makes it a little bit more challenging. All right, we'll talk British Open next. It's SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, the British Open gets underway Thursday at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland. Trevor Reese joins us outside thecut.com to talk about that and more from the Open Championships. How are you, Trevor?
Fantastic. How are you?
So, Royal Portrush, Northern Ireland, it's made a big deal because they haven't been in Ireland in a very, very long time. How did they pull this off, and was this a long time coming?
Well, definitely a long time coming, I guess. It was 1951, the last time it was held here. And a lot of that has to do with some of the, you know, geopolitical type issues, which I am certainly not qualified to get into, going on in Northern Ireland. But it's a long time coming. It is one of the best golf courses in the world, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how these guys handle it and approach this week. The funny thing about Northern Ireland and this area of Northern Ireland in particular is you have three major champion winners that have come from essentially the same area in Rory McIlroy, Darren Clark, and the other one is escaping me. I don't know why. Graham McDowell.
Yeah.
So it's a small part of the world, but the golfing culture there is unbelievable. And I was lucky enough to actually go there a few years back. And it's funny how you get these little towns like Portrush, which, you know, it's like a small town in the United States. Everybody knows everybody. But the one thing that's different is that golf is just ingrained in everything that happens in these types of towns. And you can go into the pubs after your round and people will know where the pins were during the day and will know where the wind was coming from. And it's just ingrained in the culture of the town. So it's going to be awesome to see. I am interested to see how the fan interaction works out, because it is a difficult course to walk sometimes. Obviously, in British Open conditions, you have a lot of thick gorse, as they call it, or hilly terrain. So I'll be interested to see how the course is set up from that perspective, but looking forward to a great week.
What is the characteristic of this golf course? You know, listen, I watch the British Open. Sometimes the aesthetic beauty of the golf course is sometimes lost in the grayness of the golf course. But this looks lush and green and beautiful. But what is its defining characteristic?
Well, yeah, it is. It is a little bit different this year. I mean, if you think back to Carnoustie last year, it was kind of burnt out a little bit, which yeah. is what some of the courses tend to deal with, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's just, you know, the way it is. I still think you're going to see it's a true links golf course in that you can't bomb and gouge your way around it like you would at a typical United States style golf course. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of players emerge this weekend, because the guys that hit it, 500 yards and hit a wedge into a par five, they're going to be able to do well, but they're not necessarily set up well for a golf course like that with the style of play that they have. So it's going to favor players that have shot-making ability. It's going to favor experience. One stat I was reading is that the average age recently of Open Championship winners is 36, and all the other majors are much lower. So to me, that says that experience counts. Now, obviously, none of these guys have played this course in an Open Championship, but there are certain guys that have played a lot more links golf than others. Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson maybe even could come out of nowhere. He hasn't eaten anything in a month or whatever.
Yeah, right.
But maybe he can do it. So experience is going to come into play here. It's a beautiful golf course. You're going to get winds that change direction from day to day, as is often the case with a lot of links golf courses, just to the proximity to the water. And we've all been to the beach, and wind changes without any notice. So I think I'd look for that. But it is a true Lynx golf course, and while it does look green, it's going to take shots that you need to land short and have run up and all that kind of stuff, and maybe chipping with a 7-iron instead of a wedge, and wind will affect putts and things like that. So it's going to be great fun to watch.
Tiger hasn't played a lot since winning at the Masters. Is there something to be read into that? Is it just the way he is? Should he have been playing more based on how he's been playing in the last two majors?
Yeah, I guess he finished 21st at the U.S. Open, which was, fine. And he hasn't played since then. And yeah, I guess there's a case to be made he should be playing a little bit more. But then again, you're talking about a guy that's had multiple back surgeries, and he's 43, and he wants to preserve his body as best he can. And it's interesting, I was thinking about this, because I figured you would ask something kind of along these lines, and we're kind of in a point of Tiger's career where he could either win or he could flame out and miss the cut, and neither would be surprising in pretty much any tournament he plays from now on, for a few more years at least. As we saw with the Masters, he's capable of doing it against the best, but he's also capable of just not really having it for a week. And I wonder if the cool, rainy weather is going to affect him in any way. He does obviously have back issues, and cool, rainy weather is not good for that. But, he seems also kind of refreshed. He played 36 a couple times this week leading up to it. He really didn't prepare much for the U.S. Open, and he seems to be preparing a lot more for this one. So, I don't like him this week as a winner. I think that he will play well, because of what we were talking about before when it comes to experience and shot-making ability and that kind of stuff. So I think Tiger can compete in these Open Championships well into his later 40s and maybe even into his 50s. So I always give him that. I'd say a top 15, top 20 is a reasonable expectation for Tiger this week. But, yeah, it is upsetting that he doesn't play more.
It seems to be, like you mentioned earlier, about the Ireland guys, and Rory McIlroy would probably be the favorite going into this. He has played that course his whole life, had a course record there when he was 16, and I know the course has changed. Rory is interesting. When sometimes you want something so bad, it's harder to get. But McIlroy has had a career where when he's played really well, he wins, and he overcomes when he had the lead at the Masters when he was 21 and lost it, came right back and destroyed the field at Congressional and won the U.S. Open. He doesn't seem to be the kind of golfer that is subject to the kind of pressure of winning on the home course or whatever. Do you get that feeling that Rory is ready to not only win again at the British Open but win here?
So it's tough for me to say, because I agree with a lot of what you said. I do think that he's had the pressure the past few years of coming into the Masters, playing really well, and everyone saying, okay, this is it, Rory. This is the time where you complete the career Grand Slam, and hasn't really been much of a factor a lot of times. And so that, I kind of think about that a little bit. Maybe is he getting the same kind of pressure this week? Like, Rory, you're coming back to Portrush, and you shot 61 here when you were a teenager. This is the time to get another championship. Does he let that get to him this week? I don't know. He's been playing really well this year, but he also, in the past few years, has had trouble kind of closing things out. He struggled with putting. So it's going to be very intriguing for me to watch him over the week, because I just don't know what we're going to get, to be honest. I wish I had a better answer. I don't know what we're going to get, because it could go either way. When he's on, he's the most talented player in the world. He's the best player in the world for my money, when he's got it all working. But there are weeks where he just doesn't have it going. And you look at his swing, you look at his demeanor, you look at all that stuff. I mean, there's no way he should really ever lose. I mean, he is better than everybody else when he's at his best. And I don't know if he lets the pressure get to him or the obligations he has during the week. I mean, I'm sure that he's had to do a bunch of things being from Northern Ireland, maybe seeing family or, you know, whatever it is that he's maybe not been able to focus 100% on the golf course. You know, it's just speculation. But then again, he's played this course maybe more than anybody in the field. So he's got that going for him. And like I said, experience is going to come into play. So I don't know if he'll win. I certainly think he'll be in the top 10, though.
Trevor Reese joins us on a Progressive Insurance Hotline talking British Open. All right, one final question. I want to get to Brooks Koepka. If Koepka were to win the British Open here, and this is the final major of the year, and finishes yet another year with two majors, it's hard to imagine him solidifying himself more in the history of the game, but this would be yet another, you know, leg of the career Grand Slam. But what would it say about the last few years of the Koepka dominance and how we should be viewing this guy who just, I'm still blown away he's not on my TV more selling products.
I agree. I mean, I guess a lot of that's just his personality. I mean, he's kind of very matter of fact when it comes to anytime he's interviewed in the media. I mean, at the U.S. Open during his press conference, he was like, "Well, if the golf course is hard, that stinks. You know, everybody's got to play it." You know, like that was basically his thought process. So you know, he doesn't have maybe the charisma that some of the other guys do, like the Phil Mickelson or something like that, or the, you know, sitting there telling jokes with other players. I don't know what it is. I think he is one of the most interesting people on tour. And maybe that doesn't translate to the non-golf fan, but I think it's fascinating the fact that he's come out and said, yeah, you know, regular tournaments, I don't really practice beforehand. I just show up and play. Majors, I'll put in some effort because those are the ones that I want to win. And he's proved he can do that.
He's doing great.
So I think that's fascinating because for years and years, you had Tiger Woods saying, every time I tee it up, I want to win, you know, and it's kind of a different mindset. And I don't know if just the average sports fan doesn't appreciate how hard a major championship is to win, or they just don't like that attitude or whatever it is. I think you're right. He should be selling more stuff on TV. He should have his own shoe line. He should have, you know, whatever it is. A chain of restaurants. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, he should be doing all that, but he's not. He's just winning major golf championships, and I think that's enough for him because he'll go down as one of the best players in the history of the game.
It is amazing. Such a quick turn. We didn't know who he was 3 years ago, and now he's one of the top golfers in the world and is solidifying himself in the history of the game. Trevor, great stuff. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the tournament this week.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Trevor Reese again. OutsideTheCut.com is the website on the British Open. We'll come back and wrap up some thoughts on the Open Championship. It gets underway tomorrow. It's coming up, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right. SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Thanks to Trevor Reese on our Progressive Insurance Hotline. Talking a little Open Championship, final major of the year. I know some of you just watch the majors. I just watch the majors. I mean, I'll watch a couple of tournaments outside, but not much. You know, golf is just, the majors are just so important. They're historical, and I'm sorry, the Travelers just isn't. It's a good tournament. It's a nice tournament, but it's just, it isn't. The John Deere isn't. But, you know, you get me out to the British Open, watch a tournament where I know, you know, hey, listen, there are winners of the majors that don't, you know, that still go down in history, but they're not really remembered. But the British Open, they remember everybody. Back in 2003, there was a guy named Ben Curtis that won. I never heard of him. Most people never heard of him. He won the British Open. Todd Hamilton won the British Open. No one ever heard of him. But yet, you're revered. over there. When you are a claret jug winner, you are revered. And that is something that you get to go back to that tournament until you're like in your 60s. I think 65 is when they, you know, cut you off. But you get to go there to be a part of the greatness of that tournament, the longevity of it and the history of it, no matter what you do afterwards. I don't think Ben Curtis has won again since the British Open of 2003. I don't know where Todd Hamilton even is in this day and age. I don't know where Paul Laurie is. He won in 99. He won the John Vandeveld Open, where Vandeveld made a triple bogey on the final hole just to get into a playoff. Had a, what, 3-shot lead going into the final hole and blew it. I don't know where those guys are, but I do know that every single year they get to go overseas and be part of the festivities of the British Open. That's why it was big news when John Daly said he wasn't going, because they wouldn't let him play with a golf cart, because he gets to play, even though he hasn't done really anything to earn playing other than being a former champion in 1999. David Duval, who spends most of his time commentating now, doesn't play very much anymore. He gets to go. He won in 2001 at Royal Lytham. It's one of those, again, it's one of those tournaments like Augusta where you are revered for being a champion forever. And that's the way it is. It's funny. I was talking to one guy from Britain. I interviewed a guy who's from Britain about the British Open, and they said they not only remember you, they remember how you did it. Like, it's one thing to say, I'm a British Open champion. They remember that, but they'll also remember who you beat, what you, they just take that seriously over there. And it's a big deal. And, you know, some great moments have happened in that tournament. Tiger playing a St. Andrews without hitting a bunker and lapping the field in 2000. I remember Justin Rose when he was a kid. Justin Rose, who's one of the top golfers in the world right now, U.S. Open champion, Olympic champion. When he was a 17-year-old kid, he holed out for eagle on the 18th hole. I believe it was at Muirfield, if I'm not mistaken, or Royal St. George's. I can't remember. But anyway, he holed out from the 18th hole and made the crowd go crazy as a 17-year-old kid. And I went on to have a great career. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.